an exhibit.
Really?
Asked Orso as the plate was flung violently down in front of him. A piece of rancorous matter he did not dare describe as meat, some carrots virtually raw, and some peas boiled to mush, all thoroughly cooled on the labyrinthine voyage from the kitchens to the remote corner of the palace, which had become his prison. The cook leaned down over him, her jaw jutting.
Do I look like I'm joking?
Rarely, if ever, squeaked Orso, shrinking back.
Of all the things he missed about before, it was his cook Bernil that gave him the sharpest pangs of loss. Those delicate soups, those miniature pastries, the things she had done with shellfish, positively indecent. He wondered what had become of her and her extensive staff. He remembered visiting the kitchens, a fragrant hive of good-humoured industry. Executed or herded off to hard labour, or, most likely, now he thought about it, cooking for someone else. Orso frowned. Might they even be happier cooking for someone else? Might they have had no choice but to put on those sweaty smiles? Might that kitchen have been a prison to them?
Enjoying your dinner, Your Majesty.
Orso tried to ignore his audience entirely, but as usual he couldn't help glancing up. A few days before, they had opened the palace to tours. The people had paid for the place, Rizinau had told the assembly, with their blood and tears, so it belonged to the people, and they should be allowed to enjoy it. Even the miserable set of attics in which Orso was now confined, with its split floorboards, peeling wallpaper, and rich festoons of cobweb, restlessly stirring in the constant chill draught. The assembly evidently believed that the monarch was public property too, and had determined to make an exhibit of him. Now a constant queue filed in through one door, gawped at him from behind a railing, and filed out through another. They laughed and pointed, and also acknowledged them with a weary smile.
One humiliation after another, he murmured, flicking open his napkin, tucking it ever so delicately into his collar, and letting Hildy nudge the little table towards him.
She had to slip a dog-eared political pamphlet under a loose leg to stop it wobbling.
Thank you, Hildy. Everyone else might have forgotten themselves, but there's really no need to let one's own standards slide. Couldn't agree more.
Hildy leaned close to whisper,
Managed to get you some of the good bread today.
And she slipped a slice onto his plate.
Hildy, you absolute treasure. Don't flatter me too much. You owe me 2 marks for the loaf. Bloody hell.
Orso had rarely indeed been called upon to spare much thought for the price of things, but that struck even him as steep.
Our tab must be soaring. Everything's dear these days, especially to kings, he murmured, forking over that slice of bread and starting to carve it up.
Somehow it tasted better if he treated it with the same ceremony as one of Benil's wonderful cuts of beef.
He should fucking dance for us.
Orso couldn't help glancing up yet again. A man with a tall hat perched at a ridiculous angle leaned on the railing to leer at him, an overpainted woman giggling as she clung to his elbow.
Good one, surely.
Orso gave that weary smile again, or at any rate, it was still clinging to his face from last time.
A very good one, he said. But I only dance with countesses and above, I'm afraid.
We don't have lords or ladies here no more, said Shawley.
Then unless you're foreign nobility, I fear you're out of luck.
And also raised his glass to them.
Cheers.
Some of the onlookers chuckled. Shawley decidedly did not.
We'll see who's out of luck, I reckon, in the end. Step back from the railing, grunted one of the guards,
a man called Halder, blessed with even less sense of humour than the cook. No one seemed to have much sense of humour these days, or perhaps they were simply no longer obliged to be merry in his presence. Shawley looked even more put out.
"I'll move when I'm ready."
"You'll move when I say,"
said Haldar. One of the other guards pulled out his heavy stick.
"Or we'll move you to the House of Truth."
Shawley tipped his hat so far the brim was virtually touching his sneer and slouched away with bad grace, the woman glaring balefully back over her shoulder.
"Thank you so much for visiting," called Orso, waving his fork at them. "What, you don't catch a cock in the door on your way out?"
Biting into his meat cured him of any sense of triumph. It was like biting into a boot sole.
"I'm a bloody sideshow curiosity,"
he murmured as he struggled to chew and retain his teeth at once.
"The heir to the throne of Harrod the Great, with a clear bloodline from Arnold himself, made into a zoo animal."
Hildy was too busy frowning towards the door.
"Don't look up," she said, which had precisely the opposite effect, of course.
"Oh, damn,"
muttered Orso around a mouthful of carrot with the consistency of firewood. Who should be leading the next batch of gawkers but that noted member of the Assembly of Representatives, Corporal Tunney?
"He looks prosperous," grumbled Hildy. "Debauchery is profitable under any government," said Orso, trying and entirely failing to look as if he was relishing his vile meal.
"Well, well, Your Majesty," Tunney flashed his yellowed teeth. "It is always a pleasure."
"You really didn't have to visit me at home. We see more than enough of each other in the Assembly."
"Must say your quarters look rather humble for a monarch." Tunney glanced up at a mouldy stain that spread out from one corner of the ceiling. "You should complain to Chairman Rizinow."
"Ignore him," said Orso,
but Hildy could never stop leaping to his defence, a singularly thankless task these days. She stalked towards the railing, bristling.
"Your entourage seems diminished."
Tunney peered down at her.
"Never could make up my mind whether she was one of your bastards or one of your whores."
"Whereas I was always sure you were a cunt."
Hildy went for him, tried to claw at his face, but Tunney caught her arm and they tussled over the barrier. Orso sprang up, making his plate rattle.
"Step back from the railing," grunted Haldar.
Tunney shoved Hildy roughly away and she stumbled and fell, cracking her head.
"You bastard,"
snarled Orso, knife and fork clenched as though they were long and short steels. Tunney touched his fingers to a red scratch on his grizzled neck and grinned.
"What'll you do? Fork me to death? I'll give it a fucking try."
"Step back from the railing," growled Haldar. "The lot of you, and lower the cutlery."
The guards mostly treated Orso with the put-upon contempt of underpaid nannies supervising a spoiled child. If there'd been a fight, he honestly could not have said on whose side they would have intervened.
"It's not worth it."
Hildy scrambled up, guiding Orso back towards his chair.
"I'm fine. I always knew he was a bastard, but that bastard..."
Orso glowered towards Tunney as he swanned out through the far door.
"Betraying me is one thing, everyone's at it, but taunting you, that bastard, how could I ever have trusted him?"
Out of sight below the tablecloth, he felt her hand slide into his lap. He blinked at her, shocked.
"Hildy, I think of you more like a little sister."
"Oh." There was something in her hand. A scrap of paper. Tunney must have slipped it to her in the scuffle. She gave him a significant glance from under her blonde lashes.
"More wine, Your Majesty?"
"I think I will. And pour a little for yourself as well, eh? We've both had quite the shock."
As the vinegary vintage slopped into his glass, he hacked away at his chop, plate rattling, and peered down at the note on his leg, pencilled in a bold hand. "Apologies for the scorn. Apologies for anything said in the Assembly.
Apologies to Hildy for the shove. Sorry, Hildy. They have to think I'm against you. I am in touch with Forrest. Most of the Crown Prince's division stayed loyal, along with the rugged country in the east of Middleland. I also had word from Princess Carlotte. Her husband, Chancellor Sartorius, is ready to help, and Bremerdan Gorst has his steels handy. You still have friends, Your Majesty. When the time is right, I will have your standard ready. With best wishes, always, your friend and servant, always, Corporal Tunney.
By the fates! Also wondered for a moment if it could be some elaborate ruse, but to what end? No, he knew the truth. The notoriously faithless Corporal Tunney was the one truly loyal man in Adua.
How the hell could I ever have doubted him?
He whispered, tears brimming in his eyes. Haldor was frowning over, and also took a long sniff and waved at his plate with his fork.
It's these peas, he said in a quavering voice. They've been absolutely murdered.
The man gave a snort. Also would have liked to see him absolutely murdered. And thanks to Corporal Tunney, not to mention Lord Marshal Forrest, his sister Carlotte, and Bremerdan Gorst, it seemed there was a glimmer of a chance that it might happen. Not today, perhaps, and not tomorrow, but the weather was turning cold. Soon enough, people would turn against Rizinow. The man had simply promised too much and delivered too little. As far as Orso could tell, he was incapable of delivering anything. He laid down his cutlery and carefully tore the note up into strips and slipped them into his mouth and chewed with relish. Without doubt, the most enjoyable part of the meal.
Good news, murmured Hildy under her breath.
Very good news, said Orso around his papery mouthful, and he chinked his glass against hers.
He was not rescued, and the world was not set to rights, not by any means. But he could see a path to it. He was not alone. He was not forgotten. And he remembered how it felt to have hope.